court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Perspective on legal frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. I am just a dude.
Well, Tommy, you guys have been working hard on your outdoor theater on the Shrek play.
Yes, we're finally concluding week four of the show. It's a final weekend. We got two more shows to do, and I'm about worn down to a nub.
Speaking of nub, Lord Farquaad, Owen, is very good in that play. It's pretty entertaining.
He does a great job. He's just hilarious on stage, and he's just a pleasure to work with. I hope he's in every show I ever do.
I like how he does the kind of ad-libs his little part each time as he's coming out for the start of the second, after the intermission, the second, what is that part?
Yeah, yeah. He and Mary kind of worked that out because there was a set change. We try to make it seamless in our set changes so that you don't just sit there with dead time in between. Mm-hmm. And so on that one particular one, there just wasn't any way around it because you're going, the scenes that you're changing to and from, there's just no way around it. So they developed this thing where he would come out and kind of be downstage in a spotlight and ad-lib to the audience while we're changing the set behind him, and he'd just kind of let them in on it. Hurry up, boys, you know, and talk to us while he's doing that and kind of break that fourth wall, as we say.
Yeah, Salem gets to see it every night because he's doing the lighting for the spotlights.
Yeah.
And he said last night was his favorite. He said, I hope none of you are a fan of the fourth wall because I'm about to smash it.
Yeah. And he would come up with something different every night. Do you know what my first name is? And he'd have a different name. Well, the other night he came up with the one that he liked best. He said, do you know what my, Lord Farquaad, do you know what my name first name is? I'm a Farquaad. So that one got a good enough response. And
he stuck with that one.
Yeah.
Well, you guys had the cast party last night too, right?
Yeah, we had the cast party, which when your show doesn't end until 11:05, makes you very late at night. So we had to delay recording a little bit this morning till I could sleep in a little bit because we didn't get home till 1:30.
It's all right because I had to watch the Three Lions win their soccer match to punch their card into the semifinal.
Oh, that's soccer?
That's England.
Oh, okay. I don't follow soccer. Of course, they call it football, but that's not really football.
It's the World Cup. Everybody should follow that. It's an amazing event.
Well, I only follow the beer cup.
Where did you all have the cast party?
Right at the amphitheater.
Everybody, you had it there at the park?
Yeah, everybody brings their stuff, and you have it sitting back there. So as soon as the show's over and we clear all the audience off the stage and they go, then we set everything up and eat. And usually we have, you know, a few little skits and some awards and things like that that we give out. And it always makes me think, though, if you ever saw on Saturday Night Live when Lin-Manuel was on it, and he did that parody, the Crucible Cast Party.
Yeah.
That thing was hilarious. And I wish there had been some way to play that for everybody last night to watch other than just everybody go to your phone and bring this up.
Yeah. Everybody start on 3, 2, 1.
Go. Yeah. But that's what it always makes me think of. And there's always laughter and tears for everyone as you're concluding your show.
Yeah, because you all start working on that like in January.
Yes, we did. We had auditions in January, and we're concluding here tomorrow night.
Yep. Well, it was a good run.
It was a good run. Old Shrek. We're going to put old Shrek to bed.
Well, speaking of Shrek, this episode is about the Law of the 12 Tables, which is a Roman law, which actually doesn't have much to do with Shrek, actually.
Shrek was not a Roman. He was an ogre.
He was like an onion.
And he was back in the old days, but he was not that old a days.
I was doing some research for something, and I came across this, the Law of the 12 Tables. And I'm going to just go ahead and put this out there. I had actually never heard of the 12 Tables before.
Well, I never have either.
So I decided I would do a little bit of research about it. And when I researched, I thought, hey, this might be an interesting topic to talk about.
Well, let's hope so, or else our listeners will tune us out.
Well, whenever I first saw the 12 tables and it was had to deal with Romans, it sounded like some sort of Indiana Jones type plot, you know?
Indiana Jones and the 12 tables.
And I was going to be fine with it as long as it didn't involve any aliens or a steel-lined refrigerator that saved him from some sort of atomic blast.
Or Nazis hiding it away.
I'm cool with the Nazis hiding it away. Just the whole refrigerator, hiding a refrigerator to avoid a bomb blast in the Crystal Skull was a little bit much for me. I don't know why.
Okay.
It's my main complaint.
I don't think I've watched that episode. I think I gave up after the first couple.
The first? You didn't see The Last Crusade with Sean Connery?
I may have. I may have seen the one with Sean Connery. I always like Sean Connery.
That's a classic.
He was my favorite Bond.
He was my favorite Bond, but I like the new one.
Daniel Craig?
Yes, Daniel Craig. I think he's a nice transition.
I don't think I've watched any of the Daniel Craig Bonds.
Oh, it's a shame. They're really good. You should check them out. Yeah. With all your free time.
Free time when I'm not working backstage at Shrek.
Well, so now, according to Greek legend, and I say Greek legend or tradition or whatever, because basically the Law of the 12 Tables essentially don't really exist anymore, and we don't really have any good records of them, and we know that they existed, and we think that around 450 BC they were formally posted on likely on bronze tablets at the Roman Forum. And basically it was kind of a set of laws, kind of liberal, memorializing what the custom was at that time. And it was there, at that time there was two different classes. You had the plebeians and the patricians, and this kind of, I guess, guaranteed the plebeians a little bit of some sort of rights under these 12 tables.
Now, the plebeians were the lower class, the patricians were the upper class. Is that correct?
That is correct. But we really don't have like these in formal writing anywhere, so they've been kind of handed down through tradition. So there's a little bit of variance about what they actually say. And when I was doing research, some of the numbers or some of the tables like don't match up with. It might be table 3 in this one source, but in this other source it says it's table 2 or something like that. So,
but essentially the information contained therein is the same.
Yeah, pretty much.
I thought it was interesting that this commission went to go form these tables, and they came out with 10 bronze, etched in bronze tablets that they had made. And for some reason, the plebeians said, that's not good enough. So they went back and made 12, and then they said, oh, okay, we'll take that.
Yeah, exactly. there's some talk that basically our Bill of Rights and things like that are loosely based on this 12 tables, that at least our founding fathers were cognizant of the 12 tables and kind of wanted to emulate that to a certain degree, too. So that's kind of interesting, something I didn't really know.
Well, the other thing is from everything that I've learned from our podcast, all of our basis of law basically came from Old English law and common law, as you called it, and that's what everything was based on. Well, this Old English law sounds like a lot of these things. Sounds like it was basically derived from this.
Yeah, well, the Romans did expand quite a bit into like the English territory England is and Germanic tribes and all that.
So, exactly.
I mean, the Roman influence can't be discounted. I mean, it was everywhere. So what we're going to do is basically kind of go through some of these different tables and then explain how they relate to different laws that are, I guess, here today or different traditions or procedures that we have currently.
So we're going to Imagineer what they led to, huh?
Yeah, kind of. We're
like Disney Imagineers.
We'll draw a dotted line connecting these tables to our current laws, and we won't really talk about anything in between. We'll just say, hey, these are the parallels.
Yeah, there you go.
So, and again, if there are different sources, so when we look at these different tables, they might not be exactly verbatim to what you might see, too, but this is kind of the basic idea. Table 1. Table 1 generally deals with procedure for courts and trials. So it says, if he, the plaintiff, summon him, the defendant, into court, he shall go. If he does not go, plaintiff shall call witnesses. Then only he shall take him by force. If he refuses or flees, he, plaintiff, shall lay hands on him. If disease or age is an impediment, he shall grant him a team of oxen. He shall not spread with cushions the covered carriage if he does not wish to. So if you look at that, you think to yourself, man, that's I don't know what that means. But if you think about it in this kind of looking at it from procedure from today's court or whatnot, It's kind of like the modern day summons that we have whenever you subpoena someone and have them come to court.
Yeah, it is. And it says that if you don't do it, you can lay hands on somebody, which, of course, you can't actually go drag them in, but you can have the sheriff do it.
You can. Absolutely. You can have the sheriff take them into custody and bring them forthwith upon an order from the court. If they ignore a subpoena, you can actually have the sheriff lay hands on them and bring them to court. One of the other things I thought was pretty interesting, and you kind of chuckled at this, it says if disease or age or impediment, he shall grant him a team of oxen.
Yeah, basically, I'd need one.
Well, to bring him into court. But the thing is, too, on subpoenas or summons,
slow down, you whippersnapper. I'm going to lay hands on you.
It basically reads that if a person has a disability, that they need to let the court know, and the court will make accommodations for them.
Yeah.
So, in essence, this is kind of something very similar to what we have right now.
That was the precursor to the Americans Disability Act.
Yeah. Exactly where it came from. You heard it here first.
Yeah, we just drew that dotted line. Don't question it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's kind of similar when we talked about pirates and workers' compensation. You know, the theory is kind of there. It might not be right. a direct relation to it, but the theory's there. The next part is when litigants settle their case by compromise, and this is still part of Table 1, let the magistrate announce it. If they do not compromise, let them state each his own side of the case in the continuum of the forum before noon. Afterwards, let them talk it out together while both are present. After noon, in case either party has failed to appear, let the magistrate pronounce judgment in favor of the one who is present. If both parties are present, the trial may last until sunset, but no later. So this kind of sets out trial procedure. And in essence, it kind of lays out mediation because it wants the parties to talk it out beforehand, before they make a decision. And every single case you have now, and this is the trend for probably the past 20 or 30 years, has been to send every court case to mediation before it goes to trial in hopes that it will settle and not have to actually be tried. So that's kind of the basis for that there too.
Well, you know, another thing that I read into that is that it also gives you the right to face your accuser.
It does. Yeah. I didn't really think about it from a criminal point of view because I was thinking more of a civil thing, but you're right. Yeah. It kind of does. The Sixth Amendment right to face your accuser is kind of loosely based on that, I guess. The other thing, too, is it says if the party has failed to appear, then the magistrate pronounced judgment in favor of the one who is present.
Right.
So basically that lays out the outline for default judgment.
Mm-hmm.
So if you file a claim and the person doesn't respond or doesn't answer, you can get a default judgment. So basically they say, hey, they're not there by noon. That's it.
Well, and also you can be convicted. Like, say you're fleeing from prosecution. They can hold a trial in your absence, and you can be convicted even though you're not there.
Yeah, it's called convicted in absentia.
Exactly.
Fancy words for in absence.
Oh, I thought that meant you had to go to that city.
In absentia?
Yeah.
Where is absentia?
Absentia?
Yeah.
It's probably in Vegas. Probably out there, I would say. Because what happens in absentia stays in absentia.
Could be.
That's just the way my mind works. That's where it went.
It's a scary place. Vegas. And your mind. But yeah, so this kind of lays out mediation, default judgments. And also the thing I kind of like about it is that it sets like a time limit for what the trial, how long it can last.
Sunset.
Yeah. It's basically, you know what?
It's like Shrek. You turn into an ogre. If at sunset, you turn into an ogre. By day one way, by night another.
So, yeah, that's the first table. That's kind of your procedure handbook, I guess, on how the rules of procedure as far as Roman law goes.
Yeah, well, it looks certainly applicable to our laws, that it could have led directly to some of the things.
We're not saying it was aliens, but it could have been aliens.
Yeah, just because they showed the judge hovering in a spaceship on the cavern walls.
So, yeah, table one. Now, table two. Table 2 is a little strange, and actually they're all a little strange, but what do you have for Table 2, Tommy?
Well, there's a couple of things about Table 2 that strike me as funny.
Okay.
Is that if someone fails to appear as a witness, then you are allowed to go to their door every third day and shout for them to come out.
Yeah, it's almost
until they come out as a witness.
It's almost like you can kind of harass them into doing it. Yeah,
only every third day, though.
Yeah, it's like, I'm not going anywhere. I'll see you in 3 days.
Yeah, I'll be back, and I'm going to be shouting at your door. I know you're in there. And so it's whether you give up. Okay, I'm coming. Never mind. Damn it. This is getting annoying. I can't leave the house. I'm going to go witness. I don't want to.
The other thing that was in Table 2 that I saw, and this is maybe a different reading of it, it says, where anyone commits a theft by night and caught in the act is killed, he is legally killed. If anyone commits a theft during the day and is caught in the act, he shall be scourged and given up as a slave to the person against whom the theft was committed. So basically, you kind of have a little bit of variance from our tradition, because you're able to kill somebody if they steal property, even though there's not a threat of any kind of violence to you.
But so. I think the threat is that they would come in your house at night. They saw that as something scarier and more serious than if they entered your house during the day.
That's true. Yeah, they did. And then they're making a delineation between theft by night and theft by day, which a lot of laws used to do that quite a bit, and some still do. Burglary during the daytime versus burglary during the nighttime. And the common law definition of burglary, I've said it before in the podcast, and it's a common bar exam question, is that break and enter into the property of another during the nighttime with intent to deprive them of their property. That's kind of the common law definition of burglary. But the one thing, and that was on the bar exam, mm-hmm. they would say, because it's based on common law, they might say, during the day, he breaks into his house to steal this property. Is this a burglary? And you'd be, no, it's not, because by the common law definition, it has to be at nighttime.
Right.
So they make that definition, they make that delineation in common law, English common law as well. But like I said, most of the time, that's kind of been abolished as far as that common law portion in states and whatnot.
Now, there is one part of that Table 2 that I found interesting, is that apparently there was some kind of deposit you had to make for your, I guess, for your case to be argued or something like that, if you were the one, the complainant, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, the penal sum in an action by solemn deposit shall be either 500 asses or 50 asses. It shall be argued by solemn deposit with 500 asses when the property is valued at 1,000 asses or more, but with 50 asses when the property is valued at less than 1,000 asses. But if the controversy is about the freedom of a person, although the person may be very valuable, yet the case shall be argued by a solemn deposit of 50 asses.
Yeah.
So this is, they were determining right at that point, your ass is on the line.
You think that was it?
Yeah, I think that's it.
Well, that's very similar to if you file an appeal, you usually have to file some sort of a bond on your appeal,
mm-hmm.
which is a lot of times commiserate with whatever the amount that's in dispute is. So that's kind of something that's very similar to, is, you know, a bond appeal or something like that. So well,
what that makes me think, though, is it was probably only the patriarchs that could afford to post a bond, because a plebeian probably didn't have 500 asses.
Yeah, nor 50.
Nor 50, yeah.
They just had the one that they were carrying around with them.
And he'd say, I can't do that, Your Honor. My ass is broke.
One other thing during Table 2 that I saw, it said, a stolen property shall always be his to whom it formerly belonged, nor can the lawful owner ever be deprived of it by long possession, nor can it ever be acquired by another, no matter in what way this may take place.
Hmm.
So that's kind of a interesting theory, because there's different laws and different things where basically, even though property could be taken from somebody else, if you have a bona fide purchaser for value of that property, the property can actually change hands to somebody else, especially if it's been during a long time.
Mm-hmm.
This also kind of flies in the face of any kind of adverse possession or things like that.
Yeah, that's the first thing I thought of when you read that, is adverse possession was not a thing. Once you proved that was your property, no matter how long somebody had it, you'd get it back.
Yeah, so that's directly different than any of that kind of common law type stuff. So,
but they didn't live as long back in those days. Life was cheap.
That's
so,
right.
So, you know, at 36, you were an old man. So...
I don't know. I'm 42. I feel like I'm an old man.
So. Oh, you'd be dead by now. They didn't have 40-year-olds in those days. They were all dead. If some kind of disease didn't get you, the sword did. I don't know. Somebody came along and speared you or sorted you or something.
A lot of spearing and sorting going on back then.
Yeah, there was a lot of that.
Well, the next table is Table 3. But I think before we get to Table 3, we need to maybe approach the bench to pay court costs.
Yes, Your Honor, their archived ship.
Just call me Caesar.
Caesar Julius Augustus. We would like to approach the bench to pay for court costs. We have today our good friends at Sleep Number.
Now, we all know how important sleep is. Tommy, especially after his cast party being up all night.
Boy, did I need sleep.
But funny enough, we don't think about the difference our mattress makes. That's where the Sleep Number 360 Smart Bed comes in. It's the only bed with the technology to help you achieve better quality sleep.
This is not a bed. It's a high-tech sleep revolution.
Wow.
For example, a marathon training coach, or a marriage saver, or a parenting patient's godsend. That's what this bed is. This bed will make it so that you have more tolerance and patience and get better night's sleep for an overall better life.
And can run a marathon.
Well, you're not in bed when you run a marathon.
I could train for an in-bed marathon.
That would be a completely different subject, an in-bed marathon. I don't even want to get into that.
I don't know.
Chicka wow wow.
I was thinking about watching Netflix, but never mind. You were thinking about Netflix and chill. The Sleep Number 360 bed is designed to keep you effortlessly comfortable. It senses your movements and automatically adjusts to keep you sleeping blissfully through the night.
I like that effortlessly part because that's my favorite way to go about life, effortlessly. You need to feel the difference. So many couples disagree on mattress firmness. Sleep Number beds let you choose your ideal firmness on each side so it's just right for both of you. Firmness, that is.
At a Sleep Number store, you can see and feel how the bed contours to you and release pressure points with their individual fit technology.
And that's trademarked. Individual fit.
TM.
Come in now and save $200 to $600 on select Sleep Number 360 smart beds. See the latest smart beds, even more comfortably priced, from $999.
You'll only find Sleep Number at any of the 550 sleep stores nationwide. Visit sleepnumber.com/court to find the store near you.
That's sleepnumber.com/court to find the store near you. And Mike and Tommy say, have a good night's sleep and adjust your firmness.
I think actually Tommy just said that. Not Mike and Tommy, but look, it's cool with me too. Go ahead and adjust your firmness. It's fine with me. I was a little weirded out by that phrase at first, but whatever. So,
just roll with it, dude. Just roll with it.
On to table three. Table three. When a debt has been acknowledged or judgment has been pronounced in court, 30 days must be the legitimate grace period. Thereafter, arrest of the debtor may be made by laying on of hands. Bring him into court. If he does not satisfy the judgment, or no one in court offers himself as a surety on his behalf, the creditor may take the debtor with him. He may bind him.
All right, you're coming on with me. I don't want him.
Oh, here we go. He may bind him in either stocks or fetters with a weight of no less than 15 pounds or more if he desires.
There's some guys that need that, though. I just don't want them at my house.
After 60 days in custody, the case is returned to court, and if the debt is not then paid, the debtor can be sold abroad as a slave or put to death. So,
it's also, if the prisoner chooses, he may furnish his own food. If he does not, the creditor must give him a pound of meal daily. If he chooses, he may give him more. So while you've got this guy locked up at your house, you got to feed him while he's got 15-pound weights hanging from his nose or whatever. I don't know.
And a pound of food a day.
Yeah, a pound of food, a pound of meal.
A pound of meal.
Yeah.
What is that, like a... what you would feed like a horse, like meal? Like
ground corn or flour or something?
Yeah. That sounds horrible.
I know. I mean, make it into a pancake or something. I don't want to eat the powder. You were allowed to torture people. That's what this is saying. You can torture the guy that owes you money until he pays.
I'm so thirsty. I just ate a pound of meal. Could someone please give me some horribly disgusting water?
Give him some water and he'd drink it, and it would expand in his stomach and kill him, like when birds eat rice or something.
But now, this basically lays out a collection of judgments, which we have rules and laws for that, although ours are a little less draconian, I would say. One thing we don't have, which has been done away with, we've never had in the United States, is debtor prison, which this is essentially kind of like a debtor prison type situation where somebody owes you a debt, you can put them in prison or take away their livelihood or their freedom till they pay you that debt. So
Well, I also think it's interesting that it had the footnote, against a foreigner, the right and property shall be valid forever. So if they're a foreigner, you can really treat them bad.
Yeah, if you're a home field advantage there, I guess.
Yeah.
Now, it does. The interesting thing, it does give the person an amount of time to kind of satisfy whatever judgment they might have against them, which is kind of interesting. Usually, whenever you get a judgment against somebody here in the United States, once you get the judgment, hey, it's good to go. They usually have language in there which says, let execution issue forthwith, which basically means, like, now.
Yeah. So, you don't have that grace period.
Yeah, so they gave you a grace period, but if you don't meet that grace period, you might be fettered.
All right, come on home. I'm going to stick you in my stockade, and I'm going to tie 15 pounds of weight around you and feed you a pound of meal a day. I can't eat a pound of meal.
Too bad.
You're going to eat it. The law says I got to feed it to you. Open up.
You're going to eat it. You're going to like it.
Oh, man, this is the worst meal I ever had. It's your last meal.
Well, that's pretty much does it for table three, I think.
Yeah, let's move on from torture.
There's not much else there. Now, table four, this is kind of, it's messed up.
This is paternal power.
Yeah.
And this is like my dad used to tell me, I brought you into this world and I can take you out.
My dad always just said, I'll give you something to cry about.
Yeah.
This one reads, the version I have here, it says, a dreadfully deformed child shall be quickly killed. If a father sell his son three times, the son shall be free from his father. A child born after 10 months since the father's death will not be admitted into a legal inheritance.
Well, now, the last one's the only one that makes sense to me.
Yeah, the first part, I'm not really following that along. But the last part does actually make sense. And we used to kind of generally have laws like that that basically says, we can all agree the gestation period for humans is 9 months. And generally.
Yeah.
Give or take.
So if it's 10, it probably wasn't yours.
Yeah, exactly. But now with new technology and frozen sperm and embryos and things like that.
Well, that's true.
It's kind of changed a little bit.
Yeah.
So there are cases where
people are fighting over the eggs or the sperm of somebody that's dead as to whether they can use it to have a child.
Yeah, there's actually a whole lines of cases about that.
So, yeah.
Technology's kind of made this Roman law outdated. Who would have thought?
Well, can we discuss the part where the father can sell the son three times, but after the third time, he's free. The father can't sell him anymore. There's like a guaranteed
three strikes and you're out.
Yeah, or something. But I can think of a lot of kids if somebody sold them to you, like, I don't want this kid. You can have him back.
Yeah.
I've met some of those in theater. I don't want that kid. You can have him back.
This kid's eating all my meal. He's eating more than a pound.
This kid goes through a ton of meal a day. You see the head on this kid? He should have followed number one.
Looks like an orange on a toothpick.
He's got his own moon orbiting his head.
It's sharp and pointy in places like Sputnik. Yeah, so I don't know what else there is to say about table four. It's a little weird. Did your research unveil anything else about table four other than that?
To repudiate his wife, her husband shall order her to have her own property for herself, shall take the keys, shall expel her. So, I don't know, apparently if the husband has displeasure with the wife, this is his grounds for what he can do, and he takes the keys to the house so that she can't come back in.
But he has to give her property though, right? It said?
To have her own property for herself.
Okay.
So, in other words, if she brought in her own property, she can take that back, but everything else is his. Which kind of goes contrary to today's thing, where most of the time it's split 50-50 at least.
Yeah.
Or if there's kids involved, then it goes towards the mother, usually.
Yeah. That's a...
But that was... In those days...
Yeah.
That was the rule. I mean, you know, the women didn't have the rights, so they set this up. If you're the father, you have free reign over the kids and the wife.
The paterfamilias.
Yeah.
Table five kind of goes on to that, too. It says, our ancestors saw fit that females, by reason of levity and disposition, shall remain in guardianship, even when they have attained their majority. So basically, you know, women do not have any rights, essentially. They're the guardianship of, I guess, either their father or their husband at that point.
Well, I could tell you this. I've been married going on 40 years, and levity is the last thing I would use to describe that. If there's a serious one of the group, it's her.
And the other thing was the inheritance of a Roman citizen freedman is made over to his patron if the freedman has died intestate without a will and has no natural successor. So, you know, even though we kind of don't agree with their intestacy laws and their guardianship laws and things like that, they actually did kind of provide for that somewhat with this table. So, you know, it's an extremely antiquated view, but, you know, they did have rules for that. It's just they've evolved over time and changed where we are in this present day and age. So
thank God.
Yeah, no kidding. Now, table six, this is kind of an interesting one. It says, when a party shall make a bond or conveyance, what he is named by word of mouth, that shall hold good. So this is essentially kind of a law for oral contracts, which basically says if your word of mouth is good for an oral contract. So they have a provision for that. Now, we kind of have a different thing called the statute of frauds generally, which basically means that contracts have to be in writing for the most part. And there's certain different circumstances, but you know, you can kind of say, hey, they at least had a basis for this. The other part of table six, where a woman who has not been united to a man in marriage lives with him for an entire year without possession of her being interrupted for 3 nights, she shall pass into his power as his legal wife. So this is actually kind of a basis for what you might hear common law marriage, because it used to be that I don't think common law marriage exists anywhere in the United States anymore, but it used to be that basically if a man and woman lived together for a certain period of time, that they were basically deemed to be husband and wife.
If they cohabitated as husband and wife, then they automatically became husband and wife after a set period of time.
Yeah, it's common law marriage.
I'd always heard that.
So, but it doesn't really exist anymore. It used to, but it doesn't anymore. But they had that in Rome. They had kind of a basis for common law marriage. So,
well, I think that it's interesting that in that same table, it has one shall not take from framework timber fixed in buildings or in vineyard. One shall be permitted neither to remove nor to claim stolen timber fixed in buildings or vineyards. But against the person who is convicted of having fixed such timber, there an action for double damages shall be given. So it sees fit to protect timber at the same way as marriage.
Yeah. Well, that kind of makes sense, I guess, too, as far as the double damages for timber, because trees take a long time to grow. And it was an important commodity back then. I mean, it still is, but
yeah. So you just because that vineyard looks old and run down, that doesn't mean you can take those timbers.
Yeah, but it probably also basically stands for the purpose that we don't want people kind of ripping down buildings and things like that to get their timber back. That they probably saw fit that once it was built, we should probably just go ahead and leave it up because that kind of is a good thing to have still upright.
Oh, like that contractor stuff that we went into that time about what he can do if he hasn't been paid and stuff like that?
Yeah, pretty much. But also, like, there's good reason to kind of, once something's built, we shouldn't probably tear it down just to get this log back. Do you know what I mean? Like, well, let's give the guy double damages, but we don't need to tear the whole house down just to get the log back.
Man, I really want that log. I like that log.
I know. It's big. It's round. It's wood. Better than good, it's wood.
That's right.
So I thought it was kind of interesting, too, though, that they, when they talk about essentially oral contracts and whatnot, that's where they also talk about marriage, too, because mm-hmm. they basically kind of see marriage as a contract, I guess, maybe between a man and a woman to a certain degree.
Well, that maybe they didn't have formal licensing in that day and age, so it was your oral bond that you stood up in front of everybody and proclaimed that you're married, and that's probably as far as it went.
Yeah.
450 BC, I don't think they had courthouses.
No, they just had the forum.
Yeah, and you had to face the lions.
It's the Colosseum.
Oh.
Different place.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know when the Colosseum was built. It may have been built in 450, but I'm not sure. Yeah, the forum was where, like, that was like the courthouse, basically.
Oh, okay.
So, and that's where they had the bronze tables.
It's not the same as the penthouse forum.
No, that's where they write the letters.
Yeah.
Dear Penthouse Forum, the strangest thing happened to me today.
I never thought this would happen to me.
Yeah. This is really written by somebody, I swear, not just someone.
Not just a creative writer with a perverted imagination.
Now, table seven, it's out there. Anyone who by means of incantations and magic arts prevents grain or crops of any kind belonging to another from growing shall be sacrificed to Ceres. Fair enough.
Sure. Yeah. You practice legal, those kind of incantations, and you deserve that.
And, I'd be fine with that being on our books. I don't know how you prove the incantation of magic arts, prevent the growing of crops, but hey, I'm cool with that.
Well, now, there are other parts on there that like, our city is not in compliance with.
What's that?
It says, let them keep the road in order. If they have not paved it, a man may drive his team where he likes. So, now that reminds me of an accident I was in one time.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, our city was so riddled with potholes, we were driving along a certain section, and Mary slightly distracted me by putting my mints in the wrong place when she was replacing them in the car, and I looked down to put them in the right place and looked up, and the person in front of me had stopped in the middle of the road because they were trying to pick a good spot to drive up on the sidewalk to avoid a pothole. And I ran into the back of them. So, you know, this covers that right there. If they have not paved it, a man may drive his team where he likes, which includes the sidewalk.
I was listening to another podcast some time ago. It might have been Tim Ferriss or Joe Rogan or something like that. But they had somebody on there who basically said their summer job was they would repair potholes. And that basically what they would do is they would drive along and have one of these big trucks with hot asphalt.
They'd take a shovel full
of it and then fill the hole. And then what they would do is I think they said they took diesel fuel or oil or something like that, and they would dip the shovel in it because that would make the asphalt fall off. And then what they would do is they would drip some of that diesel fuel on a different spot of asphalt because that would eat through the asphalt and basically set them up for getting their job back next year to fill that pothole next year when it formed.
Oh, man.
So it was like job security.
That's low. I've seen those trucks leaving the filling the potholes like that.
Yeah.
They'll just drive through town and just stop, and one guy will flag you around while they're filling a pothole, but I didn't know they were sabotaging them, too.
Well, I always wonder if that was true or not, or some story, but, you know, there might be some truth to that.
Because it's always the same potholes every year.
It is, and they're always like in little outbreaks or little spots like that.
That's so true.
Makes you think there might be something to that.
Well, now, there was a part of that I thought made sense and carries over to current day, and that says, should a tree on a neighbor's farm be bent crooked by the wind and lean over your farm, you may take legal action for removal of that tree. So it kind of goes into current liability about certain things. And it also says a man might gather up fruit that was falling down onto another man's farm. So if his tree hung over your property line and the apples were falling in your yard, it's okay for you to have those apples. You have right to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And those make perfect sense. And that's actually kind of probably the law in most places in this day and age. I mean, if you have some sort of hazard that's leaning over your property line, you probably have the right to do something to it.
Ask them to do something about it. Yeah.
Or if fruit falls from their tree into your yard, they can't come over and get it.
Yeah. Hey, that was my tree. Well, it's in my yard.
That's my apple. That's my apple guy.
That's the old rule. Possession is 9/10 of the law. Huh?
Don't call me guy, bro. Hey, bro, don't call me bro. That's my little monologue.
Come at me, bro.
So one of the interesting things, you said that was in your table 7, but where I was reading it, I had that actually in table 8. But yeah, so like I said, there's a lot of difference between these based on the different where people read them. And we don't actually have a real kind of basis, a copy of them, so to speak. We just kind of have handed down tradition where they were. Now, another thing I saw in table 7 I had is that basically, if a person has insulted somebody, such as causing slander or insult, he shall be clubbed to death. So basically,
they had real strict penalties for defamation. Huh?
Yeah, I mean, they had some basic defamation laws. There was another thing, basically, if a person has maimed another's limb, let there be retaliation in kind, unless he agrees to make compensation with him. So, eye for an eye, unless you compensate the person for it. If a patron shall defraud his client, he must be solemnly forfeited, killed. So, if you defraud somebody, that was not good.
They frowned upon that.
They did. And if you are convicted of speaking false witness, you shall be flung to the Tarpeian Rock.
Wow.
Yeah. Which I imagine that involved death as well.
Well, they took being honest very serious, huh?
They did. Honesty was a virtue.
Nowadays, it's a lost art.
That's right. they evidently took perjury and things like that very seriously. So.
Oh, yeah, I see that. That's in my table 8.
That's in your table 8? Those,
yeah.
Yeah. One thing I saw on table 8 was a space of 2.5 feet must be between buildings that are neighboring. So kind of like your basis for some zoning and things like that. And they said, hey, we need to have these buildings spaced out a little bit so they're not leaning up against each other, so to speak.
Well, since 7 bled over into 8, part of the 8 that I saw that caught my attention, it says, any person who destroys by burning any building or heap of corn deposited alongside a house shall be bound, scourged, and put to death by burning at the stake, provided that he has committed the said misdeed with malice aforethought.
Snap.
So they have to prove it was premeditated. But yeah. if he shall have committed it by accident, that is, by negligence, it is ordained that he repair the damage, or if he be too poor to be competent for such punishment, he shall receive a lighter punishment. So, I mean, that reminds me of every time when my younger brother would do something, and he always, on accident, that was his natural reply. That's what I'd say if I burnt somebody's house down and they caught me, on accident. Yeah, there's a big difference between on accident and Undancer, malice aforethought.
On dancer, on prancer. That was your brother's stock phrase?
Oh, yeah. Anytime anything would happen. If he walked up and whacked me in the back of the head and my dad would catch him, he'd say, on accident.
And still to this day, it's what he does. on accident. Sorry, Tommy.
No, there was no sorry. It was just on accident. There was no sorry.
I meant in this day and age, Danny would say sorry.
Yeah. So. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess he would. I just don't give him the opportunity. We're not around each other that much.
Smack him back. Table 9. No person shall hold meetings in the city at night. Now, this one I don't really understand, other than they thought that maybe nothing really good happened at night, so they just didn't
want people. They were all secret meetings, and they were avoiding that.
That's probably true.
But, you know, you could relate that to current time, is that your public meetings, you have to post a notice of when they will meet.
Yeah.
You know, like your city council and things like that. They can't just meet wherever and whenever they want. So whether it's at night or secretive, I think that kind of takes that from saying at night and just saying you can't hold your own meetings without the public being aware of it.
That's true. Now, in Florida, they have what's called sunshine laws. And the thing is basically they say the way it's phrased is that all meetings have to be held in the sunshine, basically meaning that they're open to everybody.
Right.
So,
yeah, they have to be open if they're public meetings.
You can kind of make a draw from there that it's sunshine.
Yeah, I've seen things before where, like, say the mayor has a couple people meet in his office to discuss a certain thing. Somebody can decide that was of public interest and should have been held in a public forum and that it was illegal for them to meet in the office and discuss it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you have to be careful if you're a public official how you go about doing your business.
Another thing in Table 9, the penalty shall be capital for a judge or arbiter legally appointed who has been found guilty of receiving a bribe for giving a decision. Treason. He who shall have roused up a public enemy or handed over a citizen to a public enemy must suffer capital punishment. So again, they didn't like bribery or lying, and especially not handing over a citizen to somebody else. So.
And putting to death of any man, whosoever he might be, unconvinced is forbidden. Unconvicted, not unconvinced, unconvicted. Yeah. So if somebody hadn't been convicted and you put him to death, well, you can't do that.
No, it's frowned upon.
Do you really have to say that murder is against the law?
Well, it's basically saying you can't take the law into your own hands. So
you can't you can't go get the guy and pull him out and kill him because you know he did something.
Exactly. He has to have basically guaranteed to a trial.
So even if he's guilty, he hadn't been convicted.
Exactly. It's sets up basically the basis for any of our criminal laws too.
Yeah. You know? Well, I guess that makes sense. I didn't think about it that way when I read it.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. I'm glad they got that one in there. Probably saved a lot of people from being, killed without being convicted.
Table 10. This must have been a big problem, I guess. It says, women shall not during a funeral lacerate their faces or tear their cheeks with their nails, nor shall they utter loud cries bewailing the dead.
Well, I always thought that was the manner in which they did it in a lot of those.
Lacerate your face?
Well, that they would wail. I always read about that in, different, like in the Bible and stuff, it refers to the women wailing and stuff.
Yeah, the wailing wall.
Yeah.
This doesn't say anything about the gnashing of the teeth, so I guess gnashing of the teeth is probably okay.
Gnashing of the teeth shall be acceptable, as long as you don't lacerate your face in the attempt.
Now, here's an interesting thing. The body of no dead slave shall be anointed, nor shall any drinking take place at his funeral, nor a banquet of any kind be instituted in his honor. So they're drawing a firm line there. It says,
if you're a slave, you just die and nobody can be too.
Yeah. A slave is property. That's basically it. So. Yeah.
But it also says none is to bury or burn a corpse in the city.
Yeah.
So they had strict burning laws, I guess, if it was out of season or something like that. You
know? Forest fires?
Yeah. Smokey Bear says, only you can prevent burning corpses.
Smokey the Roman Bear? Now, table 11 goes on to say, marriage shall not take place between a patrician and a plebeian. So, again, they did not want to have the different classes mixing.
Like Romeo and Juliet, huh? Although I think they were both patriarchs, probably, or something.
Yeah, I think so.
Or patricians, or whatever you call them.
I think they were. Just they were from warring families.
Yeah.
Table 11 also reads that affairs of great importance shall not be transacted without the vote of the people, with whom rests the power to appoint magistrates to condemn citizens to enact laws. Laws subsequently passed always take preference over former ones. So this basically says that, hey, you know, new laws take place, and basically we have kind of a rulemaking body, and we have to put things to a vote.
But do you think that also is the one about, remember how we've talked about how if a new law takes effect, but you committed the crime while it wasn't in effect, that it was the old law that you're covered by and not the new one?
Well, that's probably a bit of splitting more hairs than I think this goes into. I don't know. I mean, it could be the basis for that. You get the benefit of the good law if it helps you out, but you don't get the worst part of the bad law if it doesn't help you out.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know what the Roman precedent was.
I wonder if these, you remember they said at the beginning that they came out with 10 and they weren't satisfied, so went back and got two more. I wonder if the last two were those two, or did they just remix the thing, you know?
Remix! It might have been, or it might have been other things that kind of popped up.
I was just wondering what was in these last two that were made it so much more acceptable when you read some of those things and the others said, oh, now it's acceptable? That makes sense.
Table 12 I thought was really interesting too, and this is the last one. It says, if a slave with the knowledge of his master should commit a theft or cause damage to anyone, his master shall be given up to the other party by way of reparation for the theft, injury, or damage committed by the slave. There is actually a legal theory called respondeat superior, which is actually Latin, which means let the master answer. And it's essentially a doctrine that a part is responsible or kind of has vicarious liability for the acts of their agents. So we kind of have that now whenever employers are kind of responsible for their employees' acts to a certain degree.
Well, that's true.
So I thought that was kind of a very traceable type legal theory that there was there. So,
well, you could go all the way into that's why HR departments are in businesses, because if you have employees that are doing things that are counter to what's allowed and you don't handle it in a proper way, then you're liable for it.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't condone those actions, and you may print stuff that says don't do that, or you may even have training classes. But if you don't have ways to formally handle that, then you could end up being liable for it.
Yeah. The Romans basically had their own HR department.
Yeah. HR puffin stuff.
So, well, that pretty much does it for the 12 tables in a nutshell. We really don't have a strict reading of them. We could say this is what this stood for and this is what this one was. But as it's been handed down through tradition, that's kind of our understanding of what these different tables were.
Well, it's interesting. 450 BC was a long time ago. When you look at some of these laws, yeah, they sound real wild. I mean, you know, you're having to put asses up as your deposit and stuff like that. But when you think about, you know, society doesn't change. That's the same. They're saying the same things. This is what we need to do to be civil to each other. And you got the same thing in today's laws.
Yeah. Now, this is kind of after there was we talked about the Code of Hammurabi, which was a little bit before this. That was
the Mesopotamians.
And the Babylonians, yep. And that was about 1754. But, you know, this is kind of after that. But still, it's kind of an interesting thing, I think. It's lesser known than the Code of Hammurabi, certainly.
Well, I found it interesting and fun.
I'm glad you had fun. That's the point of our podcast.
Right.
To have fun.
I don't want my head to hurt afterwards. Some of the times you go through these explanations and my head hurts afterwards trying to figure out what those big words mean.
My head hurts a little bit. I don't know why. I had one margarita at dinner last night and my head hurts today. It's not fair getting old. I don't like it.
Tell me about it, dude.
So that's going to do it and then bring us to
Legal briefs.
So legal briefs is a part of the show where I ask Tommy different legal questions based on some of the theories we talked about. And for this episode, it's probably not super fair to get in too much detail since we talked about a lot of different legal theories, but I'll just maybe highlight a couple of them.
I'm prepared for your chicanery.
Table one talked about subpoena and summons. So what was the things about subpoena and summons that was very similar?
Well, the subpoena is like when they said that you could lay hands on the guy if you called him as a witness and he didn't show up, that you could go lay hands on him and drag his ass in there. And so that's kind of the same thing as subpoena.
All 50 of them.
That's right. And the summons is the same thing, is that you tell somebody that you got them there as a witness, and so they are supposed to show up for it. And then if they don't, then you can issue the subpoena, which is laying your hands on them.
That's right. The other thing, too, is remember they said if they don't show up, then you can get a default judgment against them.
Right. And we had to decide by sunset.
That's right. So the default judgment is basically if they didn't show up by noon, then you could get a default judgment against them, which we have that in this day and age. We have you file a complaint, and if nobody answers, then you can get a default judgment.
That's a quick judgment, too. By sunset, that's pretty good. Go in and file it and get it done the same day. Now that's justice
Roman,
at its quickest.
Roman efficiency.
That's right. Otherwise, you might suffer from premature incarceration.
So what is common law marriage?
Common law marriage is when two people live together and act as if they are married. And after a certain number of years, depending on where they're at, then that is recognized as being married, even though they haven't gone through the formal process.
And where does that exist in the United States?
Nowhere. Or in the minds of some people, maybe. I don't know.
I forget. I was watching some movie, and there was some kind of redneck kind of guy, and he basically was like, I'm going to have to move out for a month, otherwise she's going to get common law on me.
That's what I was wondering is, oh, we're getting close. I'm going to move out so that this thing doesn't take. Don't want to be trapped, you know. Yeah, we've been together for 10 years, but I still hadn't made up my mind yet.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, it's my understanding. It's not anywhere, but who knows? There may be some state out there that still has it. But
it's kind of like adverse possession.
Yeah, it's very state specific. Okay, what is a patrician?
A patrician. It's, well, your sister is a patrician. Patricia DeChantel.
Her name is Patricia, yes.
Yeah. Well, it's a high-class person.
And you can contrast that with a...
plebeian.
That's right.
You know, they call people at West Point, I think, that are new ones, like instead of freshmen, don't they call them plebes?
They do. I think in their first summer, and also at the Naval Academy as well, they call them the
plebes. Is that you think that's short for plebeian? That means that they're the lower... Oh, level people?
It almost certainly is. And I think that's like you have your plebe summer, which is what you do before you actually go there. So
it's better than being a dweeb.
A dweeb?
Yeah.
Not only was he a plebe, he was also a dweeb.
That sounds like a song.
And the last one is respondeat superior. We just talked about it.
Oh, that's like the one where if your slave went and robbed somebody and you had knowledge of it, or they destroyed property and you had knowledge of it, then you stand responsible for their actions.
That's right. The Latin actually means let the master answer.
Let the master beware.
And currently we have that kind of a lot of times with employers, employees, and you have kind of vicarious liability for the actions of your employees.
Because your employer is your master. You must serve him and he provides your meal.
And if you want to go to work for Tommy at Tridata,
we'll give you 2 pounds of meal a day.
All the meal you can handle. Well, that's going to do it for legal briefs.
Well, I did quite well in this.
You did. You were basically a Roman. We're not going to call you a patrician, but you're somewhere between a patrician and a plebeian.
I'm a Roman numeral.
You're a Roman dweeb. You're a Roman numeral.
I'm a Roman numeral.
The funny thing is actually I was reading these different tables, and the tables were actually written in Roman numerals, which I thought was kind of appropriate.
Well, that would be just downright wrong to not put them in Roman numerals.
Wouldn't it, though?
Yeah. I mean, we wouldn't be able to read them because we were all Romanized.
How are you on your Roman numerals?
I know them up to a point. I used to know them real well. I don't know them so much anymore.
Yeah.
Back in the day when we used them, you know, when I was a Roman. Although, you know, there are the ones you have to watch out for, certain kinds.
Yeah.
You know, the ones with Roman hands and Russian fingers.
What? Roman hands and Russian fingers?
Yeah, those kind of guys. All the ladies should watch out for guys that are mixed breed like that. They have Roman hands and Russian fingers.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well, then not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out, though, right?
Usually. Good. This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Sproul. And I'm just a dude.